What's up, everybody? Thank you so much for tuning in for another week of the Rational Revolution here, Memorial Day weekend. Oh my gosh. This is Mark Becker, your host. Here we are for another week. If you missed it, we had last week, we had a really fascinating discussion with Natalie Eilbert about mental health and some of the stuff that she's working on. If you missed it, you can download all of our episodes as a podcast in podcast form. Just check out the Civic Media app wherever you get your apps, and listen. It's really worth it. She's brilliant. You know, she's a journalist here in Green Bay, and she's headed to work for the Journal Sentinel, the big brother to the South, in Milwaukee. So we're sad to see her go, but it certainly is an incredible opportunity for her to really continue that work. But today we have another award winning journalist. With us, we have Mr. Dan Schaefer. He is the founder and editor of The Recombobulation Area. If you don't know what that is, you should subscribe like I do. You can find just Google that, Recombobulation Area. You can probably spell it wrong and they'll figure it out. It is definitely worth your time if you're a newsie, if you want to know kind of what's going on. Dan Schaefer, what's up, dude?
Hey, Mark. Thanks so much for having me. Glad to be on the show.
Yeah, man. I think our paths crossed a few years ago back when you were with a publication.
Okay.
On some sort of political story at some point. But then I think I've started following you on Twitter and seeing the things that you were saying, and we'll talk about all that. But I think one of my favorites, I think it's you, that says on Saturday mornings at like 7 o'clock, you're like, "Good morning, fellow parents."
That's right. Seven o'clock is usually on the later end for that kind of thing too, because the only people who are awake, you know, in the 6 o'clock hour on a Saturday morning in the state of Wisconsin are parents of young children.
That's correct.
I have two young daughters who like to wake up very early on Saturday morning. Uh-huh. So I take the Saturday morning shift and make that joke on Twitter, you know, "Good morning, fellow parents." Yes. No one else is awake and on Twitter at like, you know, I think that my last one that I posted last week, because my daughters got up crazy early, was like 5:30 or something like that.
Oh my God. What time do they go to bed?
I mean, they'll still go to bed at the normal time, like 8:30 or something like that. But then they just need to wake up. But before, and I'm not an early riser. So 5:30 mm-hmm. in the morning is basically the middle of the night.
It's terrible.
Mm-hmm. So,
how old are your kids?
7 and 3.
Oh man. Yeah. That's what I have a 7-year-old and I have a 3-year-old too. So yeah.
Geez. Oh wow.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk, I always ask the guests here, we're talking about Dan Schaefer. I always ask the first question is, how did you get into your field? And mm-hmm. so, you know, I just to kind of give a background of who you are and what you do, you know, how did you get into journalism?
Yeah. So I've been, you know, before I started the Recombobulation Area, while I was a stay-at-home dad. Mm-hmm. 5 years ago, I just moved back to Milwaukee. I lived in Seattle and worked at Seattle Magazine for a little while. And then I moved back to Milwaukee and was going to be a stay-at-home dad with my daughter for a little while. And instead of freelancing, I decided to start my own thing with the Recombobulation Area. But years before that, I've been a journalist in and around Milwaukee for most of the past, you know, 12, 13 plus years now. I worked at Biz. I was a reporter at Biz Times Milwaukee. I was an assistant editor at Milwaukee Magazine. I was a reporter at the Milwaukee Business Journal. I freelanced in, you know, just about every publication in and around Milwaukee, you know, throughout the 2010s or whatever. A lot of experience being a reporter and editor and writer in this city. And I went to college at UW Oshkosh. Initially was not taking the journalism path. I was a political science major. I thought maybe I'd work for a party or you know, NGO or something like that. But realized quickly that I did not want to be on the politics side of things. And had a friend who was in one of my English classes who was telling me, "Hey, you're a pretty good writer. Would you ever want to write for the newspaper?" write like an opinion column or something like that. And I was like, oh, well, that's pretty interesting. And so I tried it out and I really, really liked it. And then I was on staff at the student newspaper before I had even added journalism as a second major. So just got really involved at the UW Oshkosh Advanced Titan as the opinion editor and columnist, and then later as a news writer and digital editor and a whole bunch of different things there. But that's kind of, yeah, it was, and it, during college, I kind of found my path to be a journalist, and then graduated at the absolute worst possible time to graduate college as a journalist, in December of 2008. So it took me a couple years to find something full time as a journalist in Milwaukee. But
yeah, jobs were easy to find then, I hear. Yeah. No, that's awesome. So like, how, so you worked with those publications and everything, and I know, you know, I was looking at your bio and you became a stay-at-home dad, which is awesome. How has the recombobulation area grown since you started that?
Yeah. So I started it in,
cause that's your full-time job now, right? I mean,
it's my full-time job now. I formed an LLC and I'm now making, you know, as much through reader subscriptions as I was as a staff writer or editor at a number of these publications and all that. So, which is pretty cool. But I started it, you know, as a part-time thing, as a stay-at-home dad in late 2019. And then of course 2020 happens and I wasn't, you know, with young kids, and my wife was pregnant that year, so we weren't going out too much.
Yep.
So lots to write about in Wisconsin politics in 2020, no shortage of things really ever to write about, when it comes to Wisconsin politics and Milwaukee politics, what have you. And then, you know, just kind of ramped up from there. Like there was, you know, a lot to write about with the 2020 election and everything that was happening that year. But it was in 2022 that I made the decision to kind of go full time with it and make this my full time job. And that was right before the midterms. I had done a little bit of freelancing. I wrote a piece for the New York Times about the Democratic primary for Senate, which ended up not being a primary, and just kind of generally writing about the race there. And then, through the last couple of years, have able to, you know, grow it through reader subscriptions. It's not through, you know, dark money or, you know, weird ads or anything like that. It's just through people coming and subscribing for $5 a month or $50 a year to support our weird little project called the Recombobulation Area. And it's grown considerably. And now we're at a really interesting spot where, you know, we just had our Milwaukee Day sale, which has kind of become the Black Friday type of event for our publication. And then that was a big deal last month in April. And now we're less than 6 months away from the election. And so there's going to be a whole lot for us to do at the Recombobulation Area over the next few months.
Yeah, I mean, it's really going to be, it's, if you're a political person or a reporter for that, you know, Wisconsin is going to be the center of the political universe really for the next, you know, handful of months. And it's going to be, you know, we are the front lines of what's going to happen. You know, and so I think it's interesting how going back to going from having a steady paycheck to kind of writing your own way here, how has that been? You know, you're basically you are a small business owner.
Yeah, that's right. Entrepreneur, small business owner.
That's right.
On the grind, you know, whatever buzzword, hashtag nonsense that is associated with that. But yeah, it's been a really interesting experience with it and just kind of learning that side of being a journalist. And I think, you know, I publish on Substack and that's where people subscribe. And I think that's a really interesting place for independent journalists to go. And not just Substack, there's a bunch of different kind of newslettery type platforms for this, but that just happens to be where I found my audience. And I think it's an interesting time for, you know, independent journalists to have that option, because we have, you know, traditional journalism, whether it's places like the Gannett papers that are owned by this awful conglomerate, or if it's, you know, even just here in Milwaukee, like, part of the reason I started it too, because I recognized that there were fewer and fewer places having political opinion type work.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, that's like I mentioned, that's what I started doing when I was in college. And, you know, even though writing and reporting and doing all sorts of things in Milwaukee since then, I wanted to at some point kind of get back to, you know, writing something with a voice and opinion and, and perspective and all that. When I started it in 2019, this is the same year that the Journal Sentinel effectively got rid of its opinion section.
Yeah, right.
Most of the other publications in Milwaukee throughout the 2010s had pivoted from writing more serious news and controversial topics and politics and things like that to being more of the safe, like dining events, here's what's happening type of stuff. And I just felt like there was an opportunity there in a city this big, and a city that has, you know, a pretty clear political lean to it, to have a perspective that reflects that in a certain way. I have obviously found enough of an audience to give me a job with it too. I think it's been a pretty interesting path with that, but I think it's just so many, I would be interested to see if this is going to continue to grow where journalists are not necessarily part of, you know, a publication, but doing things more on their own. And I had a certain readership through Twitter, through my previous jobs and what have you, may have found me there, it's been an interesting road.
Yeah. So I want to ask you too, Dan Schaefer, like what you, so independent, where is that voice, you know, on that scale? I don't know who puts it out, but like the media bias scale, you know, cause you are writing independent. Where would you land on that?
I certainly lean to the left.
Sure.
But I feel like I'm probably, you know, closer, probably to the right of most progressives and to the left of most centrists.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Right. Because you know, it's like, we're going to continue this here on the other side of the break, but I want to talk about, as we come back, about what that opinion is and why it's so important, because that's lost in a lot of news publications, and it is critical. So we're going to continue this discussion on the Rational Revolution here with Dan Schaefer. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Rational Revolution, Mark Becker here. We're talking with Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area. It's an independent news publication that covers Wisconsin politics. Dan, how can they find that?
You can find it at therecombobulationarea.news. You can find the Recombobulation Area on Substack. You can also follow me on Twitter at Dan R.
Schaefer. That's a good follow.
Where I will occasionally tweet about things other than the Milwaukee Bucks, usually the Milwaukee Bucks.
Oh, man. Yeah, they broke some hearts this year.
Yeah, they did.
We were talking on the other side of the break about, you know, where the opinion news lands on that, bias cross or whatever that they come out with. And I was thinking about this on my drive in. So often news organizations, and especially in the rise of Trump, they tiptoe around some of these issues, you know, like something as simple as Donald Trump lost the 2020 election. You know, what people who believe the election denialism things and, are like the January 6th sympathizing type folk, when they see ABC or CNN or Washington Post say that the claims are lies, well, now that's an opinion, you know. And so many times when big news organizations will talk about what's going on, they try to stay so far in the middle, but what they don't realize is that middle has now shifted, where that's where I think some of your reporting is so critical, because, you know, it's, yeah, I mean, do you have an opinion? Yes. Do you let it show? Kind of. But you're not afraid to tell the truth, you know? And what really brought me to want to talk to you today was I saw a tweet where you were talking about Will. So it's a Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. And I, as a Republican, I went rounds with these guys, and they're kind of I'll let you describe the organization, because you did it perfectly in your tweet. But they talked about a better way to count absentee ballots. And I want to kind of start this discussion by saying that the idea that what Will is doing, and what a lot of these organizations are doing, is they're putting doubt into some of our institutions that we really held sacred for a very long time. And when there's doubt in those institutions, like the sanctity of our vote, the entire fabric of our democracy is in peril. I don't think that's not out of line to say. And Will proposed, you know, that there's some big law that can force communities like Milwaukee and Green Bay to do away with their central count. And what was so cool was you tweeted, what did you say? This is typical Will nonsense. They like to act like they're above the fray of their party's election denialism, but end up advancing opinions or legal challenges that ultimately further delegitimize institutions that have done nothing wrong. Talk about what you were referencing in that tweet.
Yeah. So Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, they like to, you know, they put out a study after the election saying that, you know, that Joe Biden won. So they like to, you know, kind of present themselves, you know, this pretty far right conservative organization. They like to present themselves as kind of being above the fray when it comes to these election denier claims, but they still end up siding with election deniers. It seems like a lot of the times within the Republican Party. I mean, they were the group that brought, you know, challenges to the legitimacy of ballot boxes, which nobody had a problem with until the 2020 election.
Right.
And I guess it's under the veil of trying to, you know, address some of the problems, but the problems that have arose within, you know, people in their Republican Party who believe these false conspiracy theories and narratives and what have you. But what I think is a problem with their approach is they're putting the onus on changing on the organizations and institutions that have done nothing wrong.
Right.
Instead of telling the truth to the members of their party about what actually happened in 2020, and working to, you know, bolster some of those issues and address some of those concerns. So the piece that you mentioned here was a piece written by two members of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, Lucas Weber and Will Flanders. They wrote a piece for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel called "Central Count for Absentee Ballots Problematic. There's a Better Way, Milwaukee." The problem that they have here is that it's an unresearched, really, opinion, frankly. And it is putting the charge on Milwaukee to change when Milwaukee did nothing wrong in the 2020 election. Mm-hmm. It has been, you know, I don't know how many times we need to go through in the process saying, you know, the ballot count, whatever happened in 2020 with additional absentee ballots because of the pandemic, that has survived so many recounts and challenges and court cases, all these different things that has all the scrutiny and conspiracy theories. Milwaukee has held firm in the legitimacy of its votes, But, and so I really don't think it should be Milwaukee that has to change here. And they reference it a little bit in the piece, is that one thing that Milwaukee has been seeking out for a really, really long time is the option to open absentee ballots and begin counting them a day before the election, if they had arrived, you know, in advance, of course. So there was a bill going through the Wisconsin State Legislature this past cycle to address that. And this is something that has the support of, and it's not your typical coalition in the state of Wisconsin, but it is a bill that has the support of Tony Evers, Robin Voss, Ron Johnson, and the Milwaukee Common Council. So how often do you have groups like that on the same page with something? But the, and it actually passed the Republican controlled state assembly, but it was stalled in the Senate by the head of the elections committee, Dan Knoedl, and by the Senate majority leader, Devin Lemahue, who blocked it from ever getting a vote on the Senate floor. So instead of, you know, taking Republicans to task for blocking this issue, Will is going after Milwaukee and saying, because Republicans will not pass this bill, you need to change your entire system of counting votes entirely from central count to a different process, instead of taking Republicans to task on blocking this bill that everybody in a bipartisan way seems to be in favor of. They didn't even mention in the piece that it was Republicans in the Senate or individual Republicans in the Senate who were blocking this.
Right. We're talking with Dan Schaefer here on the Rational Revolution. We're gonna continue this discussion. We're gonna talk about what is central count, why are these issues popping up now? Go figure, amongst other things. So we'll see you on the other side. Rational Revolution. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody, on the Rational Revolution. We've got Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area, award-winning journalist and all-around good guy here for Wisconsin. And we were talking about Wisconsin Institute Law of Law, or For Law and Liberty, Will, and kind of their holier-than-thou proposal of forcing some communities to completely change how they operate in regards to absentee ballots and counting. And Green Bay does this too, but describe central count. What is that?
So basically, for a lot of municipalities across the state, they will count the absentee ballots at the polling place where they're registered. What central count does is basically allow municipalities to count all of those absentee ballots all in one central place, which is what Milwaukee has done for years. Green Bay, I think there's, you know, a few dozen municipalities around the state that use central count.
So with the people, and sorry to interrupt, with the people that have an absentee ballot, instead of, like, you know, because during 2020 we lived in Green Bay, and we dropped off the ballots at City Hall. Mm-hmm. It was not our polling place. So if people do that, what Green Bay would have to do is they would have to take, and Milwaukee, they would have to take all of the absentee ballots that are dropped off wherever. They would have to sort them and then push them off to the local polling places the day of the election. That seems like a lot of work.
It would change the process pretty significantly.
Yeah.
And I actually looked into this, you know, when the Republicans in the state Senate blocked the Monday count bill. I was just out of curiosity, just as a process question. I was asking around and doing some reporting on this and trying to find out what would it even look like if Milwaukee wanted to go away from central count. Like, how would that work? Would it be able to do it on its own? Because we know there's a lot of different processes and politics in the state where, you know, Milwaukee will often need the permission of the state legislature in order to do certain things. We saw that with the sales tax and the legislative battle over that a year ago. Mm-hmm. And what I found is that Milwaukee could do it if they really wanted to. The problem is that it would be such a convoluted and problematic process that it really wouldn't make any sense to do. So I didn't, you know, just kind of one afternoon of research showed that it wouldn't really make any sense for Milwaukee to shift from central count. I was told that a shift would probably take 5+ years to change from central count to the type of work that is done elsewhere. It would be incredibly difficult to staff additional poll workers. Milwaukee already faces challenges, you know, getting poll workers to every polling place around the city. It's a big city.
Yeah.
You need a lot of poll workers in a lot of different places. And then you would need to staff all of those individual polling places for people to come. And, you know, that's harder to do than having everybody come to a centralized location to process those ballots. So there's no guarantee that it would be any quicker. It would probably be more expensive because you would probably have to staff a significantly larger level of poll workers, already a challenge to staff the current level of poll workers. And I think the easier answer here is just for Republicans to stop blocking the early count.
Right. You know,
again,
right.
Move supported by Tony Evers, Robin Voss, Ron Johnson, Milwaukee Common Council.
Right. And there goes your, you know, the idea of these late night ballot dumps. They're
right.
Just about
right.
Gone.
And that's, you know, and that's what conservatives and Republicans and election deniers in particular have had such a problem with, these late night ballot dumps. And even before 2020,
stop the count.
Right. Even before 2020, you know, the Republicans have been just kind of playing up these voter fraud concerns in the city of Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's death by a thousand cuts. It's, you know, if you are constantly questioning the legitimacy of the votes, yeah, in Milwaukee, eventually you're going to have a situation where people are going to question the legitimacy of the election itself. And that's exactly what happened in 2020. So whether, even, you know, whether it was the 2018 gubernatorial race,
right,
when there was a really high turnout in Milwaukee really wanted to vote against Scott Walker in that,
right,
race. And there was a high turnout there. And, you know, it was the type of thing where if you're watching the results as they're reported, you know, it was a situation where, you know, Scott Walker was leading most of the night, and then the Milwaukee ballots came in and Tony Evers had a slight lead after that, because Milwaukee is a very Democratic city.
Right.
And the Republicans will always say, oh, they wait to know how many ballots exactly they need to get over that margin. Well, yeah, it's votes that were cast before, in many cases, before the polls opened on election day.
Right.
And it's just because Republicans refuse to address this problem, and that continues to, you know, fuel the cycle of election denialism that has been so prevalent in Republicans, not just in 2020, but for so many years directed at Milwaukee before that as well.
Yeah, we're talking with Dan Schaefer here from the Recombobulation area. And I think, you know, that this, the article and what you were talking about with Will, it really highlights something that I've been trying to sound the alarm about since, you know, Trump was announced that he's running again. And it's a huge problem, this constant droll of, you know, election denialism, phony conspiracies. You know, it's so incredibly dangerous. You know, like we talked about earlier, it chips away the institutions that we once held sacred, you know, and the spread of misinformation, especially from like elected officials like Robin Voss, Ron Johnson. I mean, it really is leading the Republic right off of a cliff, and there's no mincing of words, you know, and like a bullfrog in itself chirping is small, but when you have so many of these, say, you know, a thousand bullfrogs, it sounds like a jet engine. And so, you know, this constant droll of however light it skirts around the edges, like Will tried to do, this holier than thou, well, we just want to, you know, make sure that the process is like BS. This process has not changed. And it is, you know, there's the waste, fraud, and all of that realistically is near zero.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they, you know, it's all to put talking points in front of people that don't decide to do 5 minutes worth of research.
And I think it's the point too is that nobody had any problems with this until the 2020 election.
Right. Exactly. Right.
Nobody had any problems with central count or ballot drop boxes or anything.
And we all knew it was coming.
Trump won.
We all knew, like, and I've been involved in politics for years. And when, you know, Scott Walker's election, all this, we knew, okay, they got a big lead, but is it enough to overcome Milwaukee? You know, it's coming. You know, it's coming. And nobody had, like you said, no, I'm sorry to interrupt. Nobody had a problem with it because you know it's coming.
That's exactly right. And I think, you know, for so many years, under Scott Walker too, they really rolled back a lot of voting rights laws and things like that. Implemented the voter ID bill, which is they said this, like, oh, elections are going to be safe now. We're going to have election integrity because of this voter ID bill. Well, what did they do once they had the voter ID bill? They still questioned the legitimacy of an election that they lost.
Yep. Now we got to do this, right?
Now we got to do this. And to me, it's like I mentioned, I'm a father of young daughters. So many times I have read the book, If You Give a Mouse a Cookie. It seems like we are over and over again giving the mouse a cookie just to it's not going to ask for another glass of milk. We just need to give this mouse a cookie this time,
right?
Because that will stop everything. That will solve everything. And of course, it only fuels more and more of it.
Well, and I think that's why we talked a little bit about it, but I think that's why your publication and your voice and the people that, you know, contribute to the recombobulation area, it's so important. Because you don't have that fear of an editor saying, oh man, you really shouldn't. This is going to tick off some people. And you're like, well, it's true, you know? And so I think in one of your most, I think it was today that you came out and you said, you know, Donald Trump is a threat to our democracy. In no Gannett newspaper is that ever going to be there, you know? But, and it's not the hallmark of this show is it's not left versus right. It's right versus wrong. Mm-hmm. And it's not a left or right statement to say that the dude who, you know, incited a riot that people were at that wanted to kill the vice president, kidnap the Speaker of the House, that dude is a threat to our democracy. And the fact that we can't say that in mainstream media is also pretty dangerous.
Yeah, I think it's a real problem. And I think it is, you know, we can right and left, we can disagree over, you know, healthcare policy or education or whatever it might be. But I think this is just so foundational to say that Donald Trump is a threat to democracy, to say that he is a wannabe authoritarian leader, to say that he tried to overturn the election results and fueled a violent insurrection at the Capitol. Like, these are all facts.
Yeah, right.
It is authoritarianism against democracy in this election. It is not just a normal Republican versus Democrat election. You know, this is not Bill Clinton versus Bob Dole or anything like that.
Right. Right.
This is something very different. And I think it is important for journalists, for those of us who are in the media, to call a spade on this and say that Donald Trump is running not to be a Democratic president small D Democratic president in the United States. He's running to be an authoritarian leader.
Right.
And I think we need to be more clear about that. And I think, you know, I applaud some of the efforts. I saw there was a great interview this week with Caitlin Collins on CNN.
I have to really watch that. Yeah.
Ted Cruz to task on this one. I thought that was a really terrific. I think there needs to be more people like that who are willing to be really clear about that, because I think journalists should be on the side of democracy at the end of the day. And I think that's going to be really important. It's not the side of Joe Biden. If there were another Republican running, you know, it would be a different scenario, but that's not the case. We have, for the third consecutive presidential election, we have Donald Trump running as the candidate for the Republican Party. So much of what he was talking about in 2016 has since been normalized. Yeah. But I think there is a red line for me, and I think it should be for a lot of other people in the media, is the election denier stuff just has to be, you have to call a spade on that. It is completely unacceptable. And you still see polling out there that says that more than half of Republican voters in the state of Wisconsin believe the election denial claims. And I don't, you know, I don't totally know what you do with that.
I don't know. I don't know either. And you know, and what he's doing now is he's doing the election denial stuff like hopped up on some Balco level steroids. You know, yeah. Even right now, he's saying if he loses, we're not going to be a country. You know, democracy's gone if he loses. You know, like, and I don't know how to fix that. How do you fix that?
Well, and he's even saying, like, you know, he says he won Wisconsin, which he of course didn't. He says he won Wisconsin. It was a very close race, 20,000 votes or so. He's even saying now that he won Minnesota, which was like a 200,000 vote margin. Like, you know, you, as much as people will call it out, and I think there are some journalists out there that will, every time he mentions that he won Wisconsin, will say that he of course didn't, and it, you know, and numerous recounts and court cases and whatever affirmed that. But it's just, he is making it so central to his message too. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, there are a lot of Republicans who voted for Trump and supported Trump and might say that, you know, we want to move on from arguing about 2020. Well, you can't move on from arguing about 2020 when Donald Trump is making it front and center and just every time he gets in front of a microphone or has a rally, right?
Yeah,
you can't move on from it when the standard bearer from your party won't shut up about it.
Right here, we're talking with Dan Schaefer. We got one more segment here coming up. I want to talk about what's going to happen in Milwaukee this summer. They're going to be a pretty important little gathering here that you wrote about just today in the recombobulation area. We'll see you on the other side.
But when you talk about destruction, don't you know that you can count me out? You say you got a real solution. Well, you know.
Welcome back. Thanks for sticking with us here on the Rational Revolution. Once again, download the Civic Media app. You can catch all these episodes if you want to hear them again. I'd want to hear this one again because we got Dan Schaefer, and he's a pretty smart guy. Check out the recombobulation area. I think, honestly, it's such a bargain in the world of subscriptions. It's like $50 a year. And you get
$50 a year, $5 a month.
Yeah, I mean, it's got some really, really great content. 13-time award winner of Milwaukee Press Club. It's something that, you know, if you want good quality content, he's the guy. And speaking of quality content, I want to talk about the RNC. I totally forgot until I read your article that the RNC is going to be in Milwaukee. The Republican National Committee Convention is going to be in Milwaukee, where they officially like crown Donald Trump as the candidate. They're doing that here in Wisconsin. Milwaukee's not very happy about that.
No. there are so awesome. Many people in and around the city who are just not thrilled at all about this convention happening. You know, we've been talking throughout the show about Donald Trump and his threats to democracy. And I think there are a few places that have felt those threats more acutely than the city of Milwaukee, which has, of course, been under fire for so many of Donald Trump's conspiracy theories. And now we're going to be turning around and handing him the microphone at Fiserv Forum to deliver the convention speech at the RNC. This is now less than 2 months away.
Yeah.
In the city of Milwaukee. And so it's a tough one for a lot of people. A lot of the people that I've been talking to have been planning, you know, getting out of town for the week. So I think there are going to be a number of Airbnbs in the UP that will have a lot of people with 414 area codes booking their booking an Airbnb for that week to just get out of Dodge. But I think at the same time, you know, I think we need to consider so many of the different factors that went into the RNC, and that's what I wrote about, in the piece today. You know, so many of the city leaders have talked about, you know, hey, it's not about blue or red, it's about green, it's about the economic impact that a convention can have on Milwaukee,
and that's a big one.
It's a big one, of course, it is a big one, but I also argued in my piece that it's not about red or blue as much, not maybe even about the green as much, but more about black. And black in the sense of getting the city and county's finances back into the black, because for so many years, Milwaukee, both the city and county, have had to make huge cuts to city and county services because Republicans in Madison have been defunding them for so long through shared revenue and also blocking the city from raising its own sales tax to pay for a number of these issues. And so I think the RNC and the shared revenue and local sales tax deal that was signed a year ago by Tony Evers, I think those two issues are forever and inextricably linked, because I think there was this window of opportunity that new leadership in Milwaukee saw with County Executive David Crowley and Mayor Cavalier Johnson, you know, maybe not having the baggage of previous leaders who had been asking for this change in the sales tax and this change in shared revenue to address many of the city's needs. And there was this fiscal cliff that was fast approaching for the city of Milwaukee. And on the other side, it would have looked like across the board, massive cuts, hundreds of jobs lost, fire stations, libraries closed, hundreds of police officers being laid off, county services getting gutted for the parks and transit and things like that. And so Milwaukee has needed a solution to address that for a really long time. And Johnson and Crowley had this kind of quote unquote reset with Republican leaders following Johnson's election in 2022. And that was right around the same time that that we were talking about hosting the RNC in Milwaukee. And I think there are a lot of city leaders who didn't really care the party, you know, it kind of the MMAC crowd really didn't, you know, that may have backed Republicans anyway, didn't care if it was the Republicans or Democrats having their convention in Milwaukee. They just, Milwaukee wanted to be in the convention business. They're also just opened this $456 million expansion of the convention center in downtown Milwaukee as well. So Milwaukee wants to be a bigger player in the convention business, and hosting the RNC, I think, is an uncomfortable bargain for a lot of people. But I think, especially given the candidate and the direction that the party has taken over the years, and I think, but I think, if Milwaukee had said no to the RNC 2 years ago, I don't know if Act 12, the shared revenue and local sales tax bill, happens the same way that it did. That's a question that I've asked a lot of people around Milwaukee. And I think a lot of people will tell you that, you know, saying yes to the RNC was critical to this. And I reported at the time that if the Milwaukee Common Council, which had an option to vote down, like the other city that it was in the running in the final stages was Nashville, and the Nashville City Council was going to great lengths to say no to the convention. You know, obviously Tennessee is a much redder state than Wisconsin. So, you know, it's an interesting comparison there. But Milwaukee could have said no. And I think the reason that it didn't, in large part, is because it needed to play ball with Republican leadership. You know, Robin Voss in 2021 said this sales tax deal is never going to happen. And two years later, it happened. And I think part of that is because of the push from local leadership in Milwaukee, from Cavalier Johnson, from David Crowley, to recognize this window of opportunity. And I think saying yes to the RNC, you can draw a straight line from saying yes to the RNC to Milwaukee achieving this long sought policy goal that is saving it from the fiscal cliff.
All right. So Dan Schaefer with the Recombobulation, are you going to be at the RNC doing some stuff. We should be there. What do you think, Todd? Let's get her done. Yes.
Let's do it.
Yes. Are you gonna stir up some trouble? We got about 30 seconds left.
I'm gonna be there. I just found out recently I will have credentials to cover the RNC.
No kidding. Oh my goodness. Yeah. Oh man, how do we get on that train? That's pretty. Yeah, you know, it's got to be some sort of irony for Mayor Johnson to, you know, go through all this and get into the convention business, only to have Donald Trump come and just defecate all over the city. Like, oh my God, Dan Schaefer, thank you so much for coming, and thank you for your time. I would love to have you back. This was great.
Thanks for having me. Enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you. Check out his website. We're going to post the link to all of our socials, and we'll see you next week. Thank you, Dan.